This is the Ontario Family Law Podcast, featuring issues related to marriage, separation, divorce, and even some child welfare issues. It's a companion to the book, The Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available on Amazon or by calling 416-446-5847. My name is John Schumann. I'm a certified specialist in family law. I'm a family lawyer, mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer, and I am the partner managing the family law group at Debrie Smith Frank LLP in Toronto. Today on the podcast, a deeper look at hearing the voices of children in custody and access proceedings, including a look at the social science research and the law. Today's special edition of the podcast on the voice of the child in custody and access proceedings was taken from a lecture I gave to legal professionals on how to get children's voices heard on matters that profoundly affect them, where they live, and what relationship they have with their parents and others. This discussion includes references to specific laws, court decisions, and other authorities. In the version of this podcast on iTunes, the citations for those authorities will appear on your screen. Here is that important presentation.
Leading case on this about hearing, the court hearing about kids' minds, is a case from the UConn. And it is a decision of Justice Matheson. The site's up there, and you've got the notes as well. You might want to, if your client is saying, or it's pretty clear that the child has got some opinion they want to get out, and talk to someone about, or you're in mediation, you want, or arbitration, you want to have the child heard. This is the decision to quote. It talks about the Convention of the Rights of the Child, and that the Convention of the Rights of the Child mandates that the child's voice be heard. Now, in this decision, Justice Matheson did not say that it necessarily had to be heard by hearing the child in court, but it does say the child's voice has to be heard, and that is the state of the law in Canada. Not only is it required under the Section 24 of the Children's Law Reform Act, but it is also absolutely required because Canada has signed the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and it gives the children the right to be heard in proceedings that affect them. So these are the ways that have come up about how we put the case, what a kid wants before the court. And number one, there is judges interviewing the children in chambers or in another private place. So if you would ask maybe 5 years ago and ask judges if they would ever even think about doing this, they would have said no. And if you ask judges now if they would think about doing this, about 50% of them would say yes. And if you ask judges have they actually done it, about 25% of them would say they have, except in places like Quebec where they all have to do it all the time and they do it all the time. And they also do it in a number of U.S. states, in Ohio, and they do it in California. More jurisdictional in California. They do it all the time in New Zealand. They do it all the time in Germany. The judges who do that, will come back to it, say it's very, very helpful. Another way is to permit the child to testify. This is the getting up in the box and putting their hand up in the air and saying, I swear to tell the truth. It is technically possible. Your client's going to be in a lot of trouble if they try, because this is, of course, having a child stand before both parents and say what they want is very difficult and emotionally difficult, and they have all kinds of protections in the criminal proceeding when children do have to testify against a parent who has abused them. It's still very, very difficult. Through the evidence of trained professionals is another one. That is through the reports of a social worker or psychologist who is either private retainer or the office of the children's lawyer. You do get children. There's been some studies lately that the social workers do not always say what the kids want as much as what they think is in the best interest of the child. So through an intermediary, can be a problem. Through the evidence of lay witnesses, which is a parent saying, this is what the child said to me, or sometimes they will say, this is what the swim instructor signed an affidavit that said, this is what the child said to me. Again, it's hearsay, and you have to meet the some special rules, rule in R and con, to get this evidence in. It's another possibility of a way to do it. And the last is through a legal representative appointed for the child, which is the office of the children's lawyer usually, although not necessarily being counsel for the child. So how important it is to give kids a voice in the proceedings? There are two people who have done a lot of research on this in Canada lately, Professor Bowell at Queen's and Professor Birnbaum at Western. They have been doing a lot of studies on this for a long time, and they've interviewed a lot of kids who have now become adults, a lot of judges who have interviewed kids, a lot of other people who have interviewed kids, and they've actually been able to form some conclusions. There are a series of articles they have published. Some of them are in the Canadian Family Law Quarterly and some of the psychological journals. I don't think they're easily Googleable yet because these things are not they're in journals, but you may get reference to them if you Google Bowell and Birnbaum, because this is what they do. And what they found out is that Some kids don't want to have any input into what goes on, but most do. And when they say they want to have input, that does not mean they want to say what the result is. They want to have some input into things in their life. They don't want their life to be out of control. So they rarely want to say, this is what I think the custody order should be. What they're more likely to say is, I want to keep playing hockey. I want to stay in my same school. These are the things that are important. So they want those things said, and they want them listened to. And the ultimate issue about who has custody is less important as long as they're getting the things that are important to them. That's the type of thing that when you have a judge's interview or you have them speak to a social worker or a psychologist, are the things you're going to hear rather than, I want mom to make decisions about my major medical decisions. If you have a child who says, I want my mom to make decisions about major medical issues, you know you've almost certainly got a child who's been under influence from their parent, and that's not what they're saying. Judges' comfort with actually speaking to kids varies greatly by geography, and that's where I gave you those before, all the jurisdictions that allow children to speak directly to judges. Ontario is a jurisdiction that does allow this. It doesn't happen as much. Quebec, Ohio, California, New Zealand, Germany have all participated in studies, and they've all said that the judges find speaking to children very helpful, even if it's not a forensically relevant interview. So when judges speak to children, they're not trying to get to questions like, did a parent abuse you? Is your one parent better at homework than the other? Or, you know, going through, they're not asking the questions under Section 24 and saying, little Bobby, do you have closer emotional ties to your mother or your father? That's not what judges find as much helpful as they find meeting the child helpful. They will learn what the child thinks is important. They'll also learn who the child is and what those child's sort of needs are, although they may not get specifically into that. They have some feeling for the child then. And all of the judges who've done this find it very helpful to actually speak to the child, although not obviously about the ultimate issue before the court. And another thing, and this comes to, is the judges find that often when they speak to a child, what the child says can be very, very, very useful in settlement discussions. And my experience with this is the same, is that people can be fighting over what a child really wants and what they think and what the children should be doing next year, what they should be going to summer camp and all the rest of that. And then the judge speaks to the child or the mediator can speak to the child and they can come back and say, these are the things that are important to your daughter. And this is what they said to me, and often that ends the dispute. The parents hear their child and hear the child's voice about what's important, and B, it often makes it clear what things they have to focus on to settle the case. And maybe fighting over some of the things about who has ultimate decision-making authority is not really that important, because what's important is this child wants to go see their friends on Mondays, they want to go to music lessons on Wednesdays, and out of that they don't care. And hearing that can really help parents decide the case. In Ontario, there is authority to have a child speak directly to a judge. And it is Children's Law Reform Act, Section 64. And that same section also provides the rules. There aren't a lot of them, but there are rules. And the rules are basically, it has to be on the record, which means there has to be a court reporter present, and the court reporter takes down everything that's said, and the child is entitled to have a lawyer there with them, if the child so chooses. The record is important because of appeal. You will find very few judges who will release the actual transcript to the parents, although some might. The conversation is absolutely not confidential because there is a record, and if there is an appeal, it will be released to the parties. What's more common is for the judge to provide a summary of what was said, and if one parent gets really upset, then they get the transcript for appeal. Just because it's recorded does not mean it's in the courtroom. In Ontario, these often happen in the settlement rooms or in the judges' chambers or the judges' retiring rooms at courts, depending on the judge. They don't like doing them in court because courtrooms are kind of scary places if you're an adult, and even more so if you're a young child, but they do bring the court reporter into the room. The authority to have the judge heard through professionals, I think you know, is Section 30, is the assessment provisions. Interestingly, although Section 30 authorizes an assessment into the child's needs and the ability of each parent to fulfill those needs, it does not specifically authorize a clinician to report a child's views. So you can get into a textual argument that some people have as to whether it's appropriate for a clinician to report a child's views and preferences in an assessment report. Section 112 authorized the children's lawyer to provide, investigate and provide a report on all matters concerning custody and access. And because that says all matters and not as narrow as Section 30, that does authorize the clinical investigator to say this is what the child's views and preferences are. Note that Rule 21 sets out some rules for children's lawyer's report, and there are rules for challenging a children's lawyer's report, so when it has to be filed and when your challenge is has to be made, so that if your client's not happy with the children's lawyer report, the first thing you need to do is start looking at Section 21, because you've got only limited time to file an objection doing that. There is no form for an objection, but it does have to be served on the children's lawyer through the party and filed. And lastly, the other way to get into a professional is the Carr and Kahn case, which I talked about. This is the exception to the hearsay rule. If you read R and Kahn, it's a very long Supreme Court case, and it's probably not that helpful. You might want to look at the cases that apply to R and Kahn into specific custody access cases. But what it basically says is that in order to admit the out-of-court statement of a child, you have to satisfy a two-pronged test. One is that the out-of-court statement has to be necessary, and second, it has to be reliable. Necessity was, for a while, thought to be an easy hurdle to meet because, you know, judges were willing to assume that it was harmful for a child to have to come into the courtroom and talk about their parents' divorce, and that that fact of it in and of itself would be enough. But lately, there's been some case law that says, no, if you're going to bring in the evidence, here's the evidence of a child, then you really do need some professional evidence that going to court will harm the child, because there is, when we talked about the judge's interview with the child could actually come to court. So if you want to get in those views of a professional or viewing or another person, make sure you have a report that says the child can't testify in court because it'll harm them, if, you know, significantly or irreparably. Another one is reliability. The person who has taken the statement, there has to be some indicia that what they've taken down is not going to be biased in some way. So a parent who is in the middle of a custody fight, not reliable. A best friend of the parent who's involved in a custody case, not necessarily reliable. A statement to a police officer, yeah, probably reliable because judges intend to trust police officers a lot of the time. To a children's lawyer, social worker, unless the judge has got previous experience and doesn't like them, yeah, that's probably going to be reliable. A swimming instructor who has been dragged in only for the purpose of saying this one statement, yeah, may not be reliable because they don't know how to talk to a child or interpret what a child says, and it seems like they've been dragged in to help one parent, and so may not be reliable. You have to address the reliability. The last is permitting a child to testify. It is allowed under the Evidence Act, and you can look at Section 18 about having a child testify, even if they don't understand what it is to take an oath. A child does not have to take an oath to testify in a civil proceeding in Ontario. They just have to have some really abstract, well, not even abstract, but general idea of what it means to tell the truth, and that can be very vague. So it's a really low bar to have a child testify. But if your parent calls a child to testify, what you want to tell your client, this is a bad idea. Calling a child to testify is evidence of bad parenting because of the situation that puts the child in having to face their parents. The exception to that is the one below, the Alberta case, which permitted a child to testify on a narrow issue. So this was not a case about having the child testify about who should have custody, but rather on it was a narrow issue, and the child was permitted to testify on that one issue and not on the ultimate issue because it was thought that it was not going to be as traumatizing for the child to testify. Well, the through the lay witnesses, one thing is if you are going to try to get the swim instructor to testify, you are allowed on a motion. That's Rule 18.19, which permits hearsay and affidavits. But if you're going to do it at trial, you need to satisfy the question R and Con. Appointment of a lawyer. The authority for them doing that is Section 89 and then sub 3.1 of the Courts of Justice Act. Rule 4, sub 7 of the Family Law Rules also permits the participation of the children's lawyer, but not as a party to the proceedings. They've got separate rules. Although there are a lot of case laws about whether or not you can order costs against a children's lawyer, and you can get costs against a children's lawyer if they're being really bad and not representing the children's views appropriately, or otherwise behaving in an unreasonable fashion. What a child's counsel is supposed to do is a subject of some ongoing debate. Strobridge is an older case and been around for a while on its stance and a proposition that the role of a children's lawyer in a custody access case is to advance the child's views. So if the child's views are stupid, the children's lawyer is still supposed to advance them. There is some merit to that, in my opinion, because if a child's views are stupid, they are stupid, and if the judge is going to make a decision that says they're stupid, the child still gets heard. And presumably the decision will say, I heard what the children's lawyer said, I listened to what the child said, child's views and preferences were, I don't agree for these reasons, and then at least the child gets the impression they were heard, which is one of the things that is one of the things that Ballin and Vermont found, that children who have been through the process really fear, resent not being heard in the process. Even if they are heard and they don't get their way, they can accept that, but having people make decisions without hearing them is harder to accept. Which comes down to this other decision, which is the purpose of the role of the children's lawyer, which is sort of the perspective of the opposite children's lawyer, is that their role is to advance the best interest of the child, regardless of what the child's views actually are. And so that involves the lawyer forming some opinion as to what is in the best interest of the child. There is some interesting discussion about from California, where they have a mandatory information session for children who want to be involved in the court proceeding. And it's only a few jurisdictions that have it, but they have found it to be very interesting as to the fact that when they have a mandatory information session, so they send the child an email usually, parents have to provide it, and say, if you want to have your voice heard, you have to come to this session to learn about it. The kids actually do show up, and they actually form an opinion on how they want to have their voice heard in the court, if at all, after they've been to that session. And they also hear in those sessions sort of the anger and resentment about not being heard to date, and that's why they said they wanted to be heard in the first place. We talked a lot about having children's voices be heard and how there's a lot of ways to do that, and how there's a sort of a view right now that children should be heard, and there's a lot of support for that, that they're heard even if they don't carry the day.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Ontario Family Law Podcast on the Voice of Children in Custody Access Proceedings, which was recorded live at a lecture to legal professionals. All the citations should appear on the screen in the iTunes editions of this podcast. The slides will also be on our website. Feel free to contact me if you have questions about this important topic. This is the Ontario Family Law Podcast. My name is John Schumann. You can reach me at www.devrylaw.ca, that's www.devrylaw.ca, or by calling 416-446-5847. Watch out for more editions of this podcast. We will talk again soon about other important family law topics.